Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's nice, hot, and then there is a aroma of a sweaty ball sack in the air. A very special guest, speaking of which, oh no, that was inappropriate for FCC regulations, actually, and there's probably a lot of people out there who are offended by that statement. And I don't
apologize. what goes in your plate does not go here, you know.
All right, so we've still got Rick Simpson, and now we're also joined by Jan Irvin. These two haven't actually met before, which is good because, you know, Jan's very, very well knowledgeable about pretty much anything, and cannabis is a big topic for him as well.
Is that Rick Simpson, cannabis oil, Rick Simpson?
That's me.
Of course we know each other. I apologize. Yeah, I had you on my show several years ago.
Okay. I've done so many. I've, like everybody, like Vinny, I think I lost track of them all.
Yeah. Well, I was a good friend of Jack Ayers for 18 years. And, you know, I knew, you know, I was aware of the situation when you were in Europe for a while. Where are you now?
Right now I'm in Canada, but I'll be leaving again in about a month. I don't think I'll ever live in Canada again. I've had enough of, you know, the British Empire, I believe.
Right. Well, how did you, so they dropped the charges against you, or what happened?
Yeah, they withdrew the charges last spring. I mean, the charges were all bogus anyway. The RCMP here in Canada were trying to frame me because that's what the government wanted. But, no, I mean, it's changed my outlook on, well, it's changed my outlook on Canada. It's changed my outlook on the whole world. But I certainly envy you, sir, for having the honor of knowing Jack Hare for 18 years. I knew Jack for about a year and a half, 2 years before he passed away. And that man affected my life in so many ways. I mean, like when he died, I remember I tried to write a piece for the internet and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I never even met Jack face to face. We've talked many, many times for hours on the phone. But when I tried to write like something about him to put on the internet, the tears would just flow. I couldn't control them. And I mean, I'm not the kind of guy that cries. So I can't even describe the effect that Jack Hare had on my life, but it was an honor to get to know the man. And I think he's the greatest leader the hemp movement ever had.
Yeah, well, I think so. And he was a good friend of mine for a long time, and I threw dirt on his grave and all of that. I'm just looking up your show here on my website to see when you were on. You were on Jack Hare and Rick Simpson interviews, Cannabis Run from the Cure, and that was episode number 17 from February 8, 2009.
Yeah.
So that's been a while, huh?
I hear interviews sometimes. I know a friend of mine, he'll play them to me, and I don't even remember doing them. You know, I've done so many of them now.
Sure.
But it's great to be able to get the word out, and through people like Vinny and yourself. I mean, you know, we're all working together here. And brother, we're going to change this world. We're going to make it a decent place, and it's got to happen in the near future.
Well, hopefully so. But, you know, one thing I've discovered is that we've got to stop believing in government to solve our problems, because they're the ones that created the mess in the first place. And, you know, so the ad veracundium fallacy is what government is based on. And in fact, my most recent show, we did a episode with Jose Barrera that talks about supernatural magic and spelling is mind control. And essentially what these guys do, these elites, they put on fancy costumes, they perform a little ritual, and then they write something down, and then they get a herd of people to believe it. See how that works?
Yeah.
It's purely magic, and it's a ritual. And this is the entire foundation of government is based on this, and it's also based on the ad veracundium or appeal to authority fallacy. So, you know, essentially it's the entire thing is based on you giving up your autonomy to somebody else every time you go and vote, etc. And the whole thing is based on black magic and rituals. So once you're aware of how it's just magic and spelling literally writing something down, just like, you know, in ancient times, how they would create a god to do their deeds is mm-hmm. they would write it down. So you write a book about it. You write the New Testament, and you say, Yahweh gives me everything in Israel, Jerusalem, blah, blah. And then you just cast that spell. And then you get all these people to go around and kill everybody who don't want to support your Zionism, right? And it's mm-hmm. just by these Levitical priests who cast that spell 2,300, 2,400 years ago or whenever they cast it.
Mm. Have you ever seen those television shows where a magician will do a trick that appears really amazing, but then after they've performed the trick in front of you, they explain how you did it? Right?
Sure. Well, you know, Darren Brown, the British magician, he exposes how all of this kind of stuff works, and that's what his show has been dedicated to for like 8 or 10 years now. In fact, recently he did a whole expose on mind control through hypnosis, and if you could get somebody to go out and assassinate somebody else, such as, what's his name from the Bobby Kennedy assassination? Sirhan. And he pulled it off successfully, and he got somebody to walk into a movie theater, pull a gun loaded with blanks, and pull it on who was the guy from V for Vendetta, one of the lead actors from that movie.
Hugo Weaving.
Right, got this guy to go in, pull the gun on him, and pull the trigger, and right in front of a whole audience full of people. And so this type of mind control is possible. But see, that's the extreme point of it. And what people don't get is that mind control, et cetera, is so much simpler than those types of extravagant things. And I just gave the example of, of that and the whole spelling and writing laws and things like that. But another way that mind control is used is just by logical fallacies and people that don't study their grammar and logic. So anybody who studies their logical fallacies is very much is far more difficult to mind control than somebody who doesn't know them at all and who believes whatever fallacies that come their way.
Do you reckon that the possibility for mind control is not entirely dissimilar from the Jedi mind trick? Like it only works on the weak minded. This isn't the Colorado shooter you're looking for.
You know what makes a weak minded person, but a lack of primary education. See, all they had to do is, as you and I talked about last time, Vinny, was get people to put their logic before their grammar. All you have to do is get people to try and explain why. Before they ask who, what, where, or when, right? And they will always come to a false conclusion. Well, how is how you explain something afterward. It's who, what, where, when, why, and how. So, you gather in your information, you process it, which is logic, removing all of the fallacies, removing the contradictions out, and then you express it, how, the rhetoric, to other people. And all they do is they simply get people to put why before who, what, where, and when, or logic before grammar. And so when you look at the old, the ancient classical seven liberal arts of the trivium and quadrivium, in fact, they trivialize the trivium so that it's no longer important in our Wundtian PhD system. But what they've done is they've gotten people to stop thinking critically simply by getting them to believe, well, in Immanuel Kant, for instance, he's probably the worst of all of them because he's created this whole meme out there today that you can't know truth, that you shouldn't trust your five senses, that you shouldn't go out and verify any citation or anything. And so, and then that goes, as David Harriman, who I had on my show, shows, as well as in his lecture series, The Philosophic Corruption of Physics, is that it was Immanuel Kant who created this entire nonsense of quantum physics, which, of course, goes straight into the New Age movement and all of the pillow-sitting positive thinking. Hey, don't show me anything. That's negative. The government would never do that. This person would never do that. That could never happen. That's too negative. It's this whole process of killing the messenger and using fallacies to dismiss information rather than verifying them yourself first and saying, hey, you know what? This person is actually telling the truth. So, and whenever you bring up this type of stuff, people who have fallen hook, line, and sinker for quantum physics will tell you, well, there is no truth. Truth is arbitrary. Really? Is 1 plus 1, 5, 10, 20? Tell that to the grocer next time she steals your money when you go to the store. Every time you park your car in the parking lot out front, isn't it a different spot when you walk out? Really? Is truth... Are you... Really? So, you know, why don't you just, you know, wish your car right over here? I mean, seriously, if you really believe that your car is going to be in a different spot every time you walk out of the store, or maybe even you're in Uranus, you know, the planet, excuse me, you know, I'm sorry, but these people really have to snap out of this. You can find truth. One plus one is always going to be two. And, you know, if you take two apples and you put them together, you're going to get four apples. And it's going to happen like that every time. And it's when you find a contradiction or irrationality, this is when you know that there is a lie. The second somebody tells you two plus two is five, you go, ah, I see what you're up to. And so then, you know, you have to be able to use common sense and filtering the fallacies and BS out of your thoughts, not just the information that's coming in, but what you send downstream as well.
Mm. Yeah, I've always said that we live in a world full of illusions, and the biggest problem with that is that we continue to delude ourselves. And a friend of mine was criticized by a friend of his, saying, oh, you're just disillusioned. And you're like, really? Are you criticizing me saying I'm no longer operating under a delusion?
You know, I love Bob Alamede's take on this too, because Bob always says, you know, all of these people that are standing there against the use of this medicine, you know, all of those misinformed masses, Bob simply says they're cannabinoid deficient, and I think he's right.
Well, you know, endogenous cannabinoids are an important part of the entire serotonin system and how the whole body works. So, you know, and it's funny as I do my best thinking and my best writing and work when I'm high. And in fact, right now I'm not, and I usually don't do radio interviews when I'm not. So I'm having a little moment here right now of...
yeah, you're pretty average today, bro.
Yeah. Hey, Bing, can you bring... something loaded.
It's like, honey, can you bring one?
You know? You can't smoke dope on the internet.
Oh, I live in California. We can do it here.
No, but I mean, this is an amazing, you know, the substance itself, the oil and the miracles that it produces is just, it's mind boggling. And I understand myself, you know, how people have a hard time grasping it because it took me a long time to grasp it. You know, I couldn't believe
it. It only took me two fingers to grasp mine.
No, but I mean, it's so hard to believe that one simple substance can do all of these wonderful things. But, you know, when you see it over and over and over again, like I did, and the beauty of the beauty of this whole thing is that I do, is that it can't be, you know, it can't be disproven. It's so simple, any fool can go out and make the medicine and prove it to themselves.
Well, you know, you can't prove a negative anyway. That would be impossible. But, you know, the onus of proof is always on the person making the claim. So you got to be careful of that one. But, yeah, but I think the evidence for cannabis and cancer and everything is out there. And, you know, and in fact, right here on my desktop, I do believe I have an entire file that I have saved of cancer study, endocannabinoids and THC cancer studies, both ready and open. And one of them has like 20. The other one is endocannabinoids that we were just discussing. And yeah, I've got 19 current medical studies right in front of me on using THC and cannabinoids as treatment for cancers and various types of cancers. We've got prostate cancer, human glioblastoma, multiform cells, etc. And
I love it how doctors always just think because they're able to say something in Latin that it makes them educated. Like, for example, you've got osteoporosis. Really, I've got holes in my bones. How brilliant of you.
Yes.
You know, I hate that.
It's like, go ahead.
There's 100 different types of, over 100 different types of cancer. You know, and a lot of people, when they come to me, they'll go on, you know, I have this specific type, it's very rare. And I always tell them the same thing. I said, look, I don't care what kind of cancer you have. You know, this oil is an effective treatment for every type of cancer that I've ever come in contact with. And it's like I said, you know, if the oil can't help you, you're not going to find anything that will. And you sure as hell better not look at the medical system to give you any help.
Yeah, it's like if the oil can't help you, then God help you.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I see, and also, if you refuse to use the oil, and you'd rather, you know, try your hand at some kind of Sesame Street, tickle me chemo type type methodology, you know, you're going to die. This is the thing. And I remember I told my father this as well, he was going to get all this treatment and stuff like that. And I said, Dad, these doctors are going to kill you. Okay. And he did die eventually of it after getting into remission, taking ozone therapy and things like that from a naturopath doctor that I know named Dr. David Holden, who's brilliant. And he then refused the treatment because he told him, you have to then deal with your emotional issues because there's only so much the physical world and everything and can heal you now. You've got to start putting things right with your ex-wife, you know, my mother kind of thing. And instead of putting things right with the ex-wife, he's like, oh, I'd rather die than make peace with it. And he died.
It's funny that you say that, though, Vinny, is a few years ago I interviewed this woman, Barbara Ehrenreich. She wrote a book called Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. And she and a number of other researchers have gone through the medical literature on positive thinking and cancer to see if it has any effect. They can't find any evidence of it whatsoever.
Well, I mean, when you look at the patients and everything that came to me, the bottom line is if a patient walked in, they wanted a cancer treatment, I gave it, if I had it, I gave it to them. But the thing is, I mean, I would be happy to give a patient 2 ounces of oil, and I'd be happy to take 2 ounces of oil myself at the same time while the patient's taking it, because I know what this wonderful substance can do. Now, tell me what doctor, if he gave you chemo, what doctor would take chemo along with you? What doctor would take radiation along with you? You know, they know what just
happened. If I took 2 ounces of weed, I'd be out for a week.
We're coming to break, unfortunately. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Sumpton, you know what I mean?